Levi left us a letter. My mother found it. Here is to all the ones I love. I am sorry I could not take it anymore, so it is time for me to go where the sun is always sunny and the grass is always green and the flowers smell like honey. The happy son that I had known that loved life so much and loved children and animals now would just seem like this shell of a person. I think he could still be here today had he been given the proper treatment. Here is to all the ones I love. I'm sorry I could not take it anymore, so it is time for me to go where the sun is always sunny and the grass is always green and the flowers smell like honey. Levi left us a letter. My mother had found it. To me, it's the most precious gift that he gave me. When my son was over there after Operation Anaconda, they had to clean up landmines that were left around Bagram Air Base and the area for troops to come. And they stopped to take a break. And a young Afghan girl came over and asked for a bottle of water. My son threw it to her. It hit the ground, and when she stepped forward to pick the bottle of water up, she stepped on a landmine that they had missed, and it killed her. My son ran and was holding her body, what was left of her, rocking her.
Levi Derby was born in Cisna Park, Illinois, on May 13, 1981. He joined the Army in 2001 and was deployed to Afghanistan 6 months later.
I was very proud. It was something that my mother and I had encouraged him for quite some time. My father having served during World War II, my great-grandfather was the private guard to Kaiser Wilhelm in Germany. Six generations or more in my family has served. So I was very pleased that he had decided to serve his country. He came home and all he had was a dead stare out of his eyes. He was like the walking dead. Anger, you could see anger in him, in a coldness. The happy son that I had known that loved life so much and loved children and animals now would just seem like this shell of a person. Mm-hmm. When he first came home, he was not home long when he was told that he would be shipping off to Iraq. And he could not bear to go into war again. It was something he said he would never do again. He had told me when he came home that he had killed and he would never ever kill again. He just,
Judy realized that her son was going AWOL and convinced him to speak to the base chaplain. Levi was not feeling capable of returning to war and agreed to an other than honorable discharge. Therefore, he was denied medical and mental health benefits of any kind by the Army.
He served honorably. I have it in record. I contested his discharge several times. And the last time I contested it, they agreed that he had served honorably. He had went over as a PV2 and came back as an E3. It was promoted while he was there. because of his illness that was a result from the war. I believe he should have been given a medical discharge.
Levi was becoming more isolated, not taking care of himself or working, and having recurring nightmares about his experience at war. He and his family realized that he was in need of inpatient health treatment and decided that he would go to a hospital in Kankakee. Aware of the high cost of treatment and his lack of health care coverage, when Levi and his grandmother were halfway to the hospital, he asked her to turn back.
She drove him home, and my son had an IROC that he had raced, and he had pulled the engine out of the car about a year earlier, and it hung on the chain hoist. He asked his grandma to help him take the engine off the chain hoist, and she did. She went to church. He tried again to call his counselor on the suicide hotline number, and he had told her that he had gotten almost to the hospital, but not today. And she said, well, what about tomorrow? And he said, maybe tomorrow, but everything's going to be okay. And then he came over here and he wrote his letter telling us goodbye. And he went to my dad's garage and he hung himself on the same chain hoist that my dad had swung him on in a car tire when he was a little boy. And he had felt betrayed by our government, his family, his friends. And he hung himself in my dad's garage, and Mom came home from church and opened up the garage door to find my son. I think he could still be here today had he been given the proper treatment.
Every day, 22 veterans take their own lives. As shocking as the number is, it is actually higher if you count men and women such as Levi Derbys. Veterans are killing themselves at more than double the rate of the civilian population, with about 49,000 taking their own lives between 2005 and 2011. The question is, why has suicide become such an epidemic? Adrian served as a captain in the Army Infantry and spent 25 months in Afghanistan over two combat deployments. He now works as a journalist, writing investigative articles for the New York Times concerning PTSD and the high cost of war.
The veterans that are most at risk for PTSD, based on my experience, would be those veterans that participated directly in combat operations. I don't think that's even a risk. I think that's probably a direct correlation. I think if you participate in combat operations, then there's almost a one-to-one correlation with you experiencing some amount of PTSD.
Five veterans of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan has been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, also known as PTSD.
Yeah, PTSD is a psychiatric disease or disorder that was defined in the early 80s in 1980s by the American Psychiatric Association, although it was known for many, many years, actually.
Dr. Yuval Nuria, Director of Trauma at PTSD at the New York State Psychiatric Institute and Professor of Clinical Psychology at Columbia University Medical Center, runs one of the country's leading trauma programs working with PTSD recovery.
It's comprised of a number of symptom clusters that mainly includes reliving of the trauma. And here is the idea that patient with PTSD is thinking and feeling and recalling, you know, aspects of trauma in an involuntary way again and again. The second cluster is a cluster of actually trying to be removed from the trauma. So because of the, you know, memories of the traumas and rethinking about the trauma is kind of activates a lot of anxiety avoidance, is a key component of PTSD. And that's why, you know, PTSD patients tend to be removed from society, to be alone, to be lonely, and to be avoidant of any reminders that can be associated with the trauma memories.
You're lying, right, man?
I ain't lying. Why would I lie about something like that?
2-6.
Where'd he get hit?
I gotta see. Don't look at him.
A detailed study by the Army Surgeon General in 2008 found that 3/4 of young male troops saw someone seriously injured or killed. More than half were attacked or ambushed, and 88% received incoming fire. These traumatic memories tend to replay themselves over and over in these soldiers' minds. As with Levi Derby, the image of the young Afghan girl and the landmine was something he told his mother that he re-experienced on a daily basis. The constant stress of being in a war zone creates illness. These people witness things that disrupt their sense of inner security, what is right and wrong, creating tremendous inner conflict.
In the military, there is the military's story, and that is the story that you are allowed to tell to yourself, to your friends, to your family, and to your fellow, you know, people in the infantry or wherever else. This is what happened, this is what it says on the piece of paper, and that's the way it is. And it's tough to live that reality out in a lot of different ways. I had ideas about what PTSD was probably going to be like for me. But what it came down to was actually a very innocuous event. They were attacking us, or we were trying to help people, and bad things happened, but they were in the context of a greater logic. That one moment when I was in a field and people were shooting at me, and I decided to run for cover, not forward, but backwards, because the cover was closer to me backwards, and I didn't want to get shot. I still deal with in the present moment. Now I still check the locks, you know, if I'm in a room, if I'm in a hotel room, if I'm in my apartment, I will make sure that the windows are closed, and I will make sure that the door is locked every day. A lot of it was just revolved around, not drinking as much and taking myself more seriously, establishing routines, and writing and storytelling, which is something that I hadn't made a lot of space for. But there isn't a lot of space for storytelling in the military. There's a lot of space for storytelling afterwards, which is probably why so many of the best writers of the 20th century tended to be veterans of World War I and World War II and Vietnam.
Tonight, I can announce that over the next year, another 34,000 American troops will come home from Afghanistan. This drawdown will continue, and by the end of next year, our war in Afghanistan will be over.
Number one, absolute number one, when they take women and men and they send them into a combat zone. When they come back home, their immediate family needs to be brought in, and they need to be given contact points that they can go to. They need to be given information. They need to be trained what to look for. They need to be given the help, because they're the number one help that's going to help that person more than anybody else is their family. I believe that the soldiers need to be hooked up with veterans from other wars so that they have a safe place to go to talk to, someone else that can understand, that's seen the elephant, as the expression goes. The family definitely needs to be involved. They're their first line of defense, and they're not educating them enough for them to be able to help. My personal feeling, if you've done once, you shouldn't have to go back again.
The government offers a wide array of mental health services, including mental health assessments and testing, medications, psychotherapy and family therapy, and residential or inpatient care programs. However, if you are not entitled to these benefits because of an other than honorable discharge, the cost is prohibitive, leaving them with little or no options, as in the case of Levi Derby. Inpatient mental health hospitalization costs an average of about $2,000 per day. You need a minimum of a 2-week stay, ideally a 4-week stay, which costs between $14,000 and $30,000. This great expense is cost prohibitive for most American families unless the government can step in and cover this cost.
I think that's really very unfortunate. In fact, the main barrier, I think, for treatment currently is not so much the knowledge, the effectiveness of the treatment, as availability of trained clinicians. It's really about being able to mobilize those young adults who are coming back from the wars and give them a sense that there is hope out there. It's so unfortunate, you know, there is a lot of funding coming from federal government and private foundations to war veterans treatment centers. And what you see, unfortunately, is that clinicians are available, treatments are available for those patients, but still patients are not coming to this treatment.
When he first came home, they had him on pills to sleep, pills to deal with the nightmares, pills for the anxiety attacks. He always had a prescription for lorazepam for the anxiety attacks. Then the doctor that was treating him in Watsika said that his PTSD was so severe that he couldn't tell for certain that he also didn't suffer from bipolar disorder. And they started trying to treat him with medication for that. And so many of the medications they tried, he ended up having allergic reactions to them. My son also possibly had traumatic brain injury that was never diagnosed. From the time he had come back to the time he died, sometimes blood would trickle out of his ear and down his neck. Then I took the sheets off of his bed after his death. There were blood stains on the bed from his ears having bled while he was sleeping.
The efficacy of current treatment is modest, is not as great and as effective as we would like them to be. And this is why there is a lot of research now on working on innovative treatments, treatments that are informed by neuroscience research and treatments that can target directly dysfunctional processes, neural processes. Nevertheless, among the available treatments, I would say that prolonged exposure is the most effective treatment. That treatment involves a gradual process in which we ask patients to recall and memorize different aspects of the traumatic experience again and again until they are comfortable with their experience, until the experience is not reactivate the remarkable anxiety that was associated with the trauma initially. This is a way in which patients are able to gradually get to terms with what happened to them.
So this is why we walk tonight. You're ensuring that suicide doesn't continue to take the lives of our loved ones, our friends, our classmates, our coworkers, or the lives of those in the military and our veterans.
Hope will only come now when we physically defy the violence of the state. All who resist, all who are here today, keep hope alive. All who succumb to fear, despair, and apathy become an enemy of hope. They become, in their passivity, agents of injustice. If the enemies of hope are finally victorious in this nation, the poison of violence will become not only the language of power, but the language of opposition. And those who resist here today with nonviolence are the last thin line of defense between a civil society and its disintegration.
We say, get back! We say, fight back!
We send them back over and over and over. No person can handle that. You see things in war that you can't unlive it. You can't unremember it. It's there with you forever. And then to make them go back multiple times is way too much. No human can handle that.
Well, I think that assessment before and after deployment is key. And I think they do that. Now, the question is what happened with a soldier that is, you know, coming back home. And the need for treatment is not only in the immediate, you know, point after redeployment. It's really when those people are spending time at home, coming to terms with what happened to them.
The only way to really minimize PTSD amongst military veterans is to not go to war. And war is a trauma factory. So if it's worth it to us to go to war, then we know that part of that calculus, part of that cost, that human cost, is going to be the suffering of the soldiers that go to war. And I don't know if the most recent wars were probably worth the cost and human suffering.
According to the Department of Veterans Affairs, every 65 minutes, a military veteran commits suicide. In 2012, more U.S. soldiers killed themselves than died in combat. Treatment for Iraq and Afghanistan vets suffering from PTSD has cost more than $2 billion so far. Multiple redeployments into war zones have not only had unprecedented financial cost for the U.S. government, but incalculable mental and emotional costs on America's men and women in uniform and their families. A clear indication that the greatest casualties of war are seldom on the battlefield.